As we all know, the holidays can sneak up on us before we know it, but it's not too early to get your shopping done and actually have fun doing it. Now, you may think that sounds crazy, but I can tell you that Uncommon Goods makes holiday shopping stress-free and joyful with thousands of one-of-a-kind gifts you can't find anywhere else. The amazing stuff you can get from Uncommon Goods are high quality, unique, often handmade or made in the U.S., and many of them have been crafted by independent artists and small businesses. But be warned, because everything is made in small batches, so the best finds can sell out fast. I've shopped a lot with Uncommon Goods and have gotten things that I've never seen anywhere else. Every gift I've bought has been handmade, created by an independent artist, and best of all, I was able to customize them, including this really cool set of glasses that I got that were etched with a map of Alton. And you can get things customized for you too. Names, places, anniversary dates, you name it, they can do it. Uncommon Goods has something for everyone. Book lovers, history buffs, home cooks, gardeners, mixologists, and not only does shopping with them support artists and small independent businesses, but with every purchase you make from Uncommon Goods, they give back $1 to a nonprofit partner of your choice. They've donated more than $3 million to date, so why not buy great gifts and help do something great at the same time? So shop early, have fun, and cross some names off your list today. To get 15% off your next gifts, go to uncommongoods.com/hauntings. That's uncommongoods.com/hauntings for 15% off. Don't miss out on this limited time offer. Uncommon Goods. We're all out of the ordinary.
It takes 25 minutes to drive across Decatur, 25 minutes to pick up groceries, to stop for gas, to say I'll be right back. But in 1985, 25 minutes was all it took for a 4-year-old boy to vanish from the parking lot in the middle of the day, and for a small Midwestern city to lose its sense of safety forever. I've been reading police reports, the newspaper clippings, interviews, the flyers that once hung the grocery store windows. And every time, I come back to the same impossible question. How can a child disappear in broad daylight in a place where everyone knows everyone? This isn't just another story about a missing child. It's about a town that surged until it ran out of breath. A family that fell apart under the weight of silence and the 25 minutes that changed everything. From the American Hauntings Network, this is American Dread. True stories of tragedy and terror from the dark side of American heartland. I'm your host, Adam White. October 10th, 1985. For most people in Decatur, Illinois, it was just another brisk fall Thursday. The kind of day when the smell of harvest corn still hangs in the air, and the wind carries a hint that winter's coming. Back then, Decatur had close to 90,000 people, factory workers at Caterpillar and Firestone, teachers, farmers, and families who all seemed to know one another. It was the kind of place where a child could ride a bike across town and be home by supper. By 1 p.m., police radios were crackling with something Decatur had never heard before, a missing child call from the Kroger parking lot in Brentwood Village. A 4-year-old boy, Timothy Jacob Davison, everyone called him TJ, was gone. When I first read about this case, I couldn't shake it. Maybe it's because I was born just 4 months before TJ disappeared. Maybe it's because I have younger kids of my own now, and I know what 25 minutes feel like. 25 minutes is a snack and a cartoon. It's a quick grocery run. It's nothing. And yet, for one family in 1985, it became everything. That day, TJ's aunt, Delaney Davison, drove her red Dodge Omni to Kroger with 4 children, her own, 2 nephews, and a little TJ. He'd fallen asleep on the floorboard behind the front seat, still wearing his blue windbreaker and tiny white sneakers. 1985 was a different world. Parents thought nothing of letting their children nap in a car while they ran inside for milk and bread. Delaney left the doors unlocked, planning to be gone just for a few minutes. She was inside the store for 25 minutes. When she came back out, the car was still there. But TJ was gone. No one had seen anything. No struggle, no scream, just nothing. In a matter of seconds, panic ripped through the parking lot. Shoppers searched between rows of cars. Clerks checked the bottom of bathrooms and storerooms. Within an hour, every available officer in Decatur was looking. Helicopters circled above the west side. Volunteers walked through drainage ditches along Stevens Creek. They searched the public aid office behind the village, the motel, the swimming pool, even the new bridge construction zone. TJ's photo was printed and taped to store windows all across town. As the October sun went down, floodlights came up at the grocery store. Detectives questioned Delaney over and over. She told them everything. How she dropped the older kids at school. How TJ had stayed behind in the car because he was asleep. How she'd only been gone for a few minutes. Her hands shook as she talked. I've seen that kind of guilt in parents before. It's a bottomless pit. She kept saying, I only left him for a moment. Back then, police in Decatur handled hundreds of calls a day. Shoplifting, vandalism, the usual small city stuff. But nothing like this. That year, serious crime in town had actually been falling. The homicide rate was half of what it had been in the late 70s. People felt safe, but that illusion broke fast. By midnight, officers had knocked on every door around Brentwood Village. Still no trace. That first night, the temperatures dropped into the 40s. Volunteers wore jackets and carried flashlights into the woods along the creek. Reporters gathered near the scene. Mothers held their children a little tighter. And somewhere in the dark, a 4-year-old boy was missing. By the next morning, Decatur police had every resource they could find, focusing on this case. Officers from the Sheriff's Department joined in, and the FBI offered assistance within days. But the truth was, the trail had gone cold almost before it even began. For the rest of that week, Decatur lived in a state of suspended breath. Kids weren't allowed to play outside. Police manned roadblocks on Route 48 and 51. The search grew until even the fields outside town were combed by horseback. Officers checked every abandoned building, every alleyway, every side street, every car trunk they could get their hands on. But they never found little TJ. As I pierce through the old articles and the police bulletins, one thing stands out. How fast hope can turn into silence. By the end of October, there was no new leads. Tips came in from as far as Springfield and Peoria, but none panned out. And an entire community, one that prided itself on being close-knit and safe, suddenly realized how fragile that safety was. Delaney sat through hours of questioning at the station, her voice breaking each time she tried to replay those minutes at the store. The other children were interviewed separately. Her 7-year-old daughter had been in school all day. She hadn't even gone to Kroger. TJ's 5-year-old brother confirmed what everyone had feared. His little brother had stayed behind in the car, still asleep when they went inside. When they came back, he was gone. The youngest children were just too young to understand, too young to help. Those first reports mentioned how detectives combed through every inch of Brentwood Village, checked security patrol logs, even the dumpsters behind nearby businesses. Nothing. No footprints, no eyewitnesses, just the sound of wind pushing leaves across the parking lot. As I worked on this case, I looked through the old newspapers. You could feel the confusion in the headlines. Boy, 4, missing from grocery lot. Search widens for sleeping child. Boy missing. boy not found. People didn't know what to make of it. Stranger adoptions were rare here, statistically almost non-existent. In the mid-1980s, the FBI estimated that over 700,000 children were reported missing in the United States each year. Most were found within hours, runaways, or family custody disputes, but only a fraction, less than 1%, were ever classified as stranger abductions. After the 1981 abduction of 6-year-old Adam Walsh in Florida, the nation had entered what some reporters called the decade of the missing children. Faces of missing boys and girls appeared on milk cartons. And in 1984, the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children was created. In the United States, the FBI keeps more than 270,000 missing persons files active at any given moment, roughly a third involving children. Statistically, if a child isn't found within the first 48 hours, the chance of recovery drops more than half. After a week, that number falls close to zero. Those are the kind of numbers detectives live with, and yet, they keep going. And then came the questions about the family. TJ had been born in Peoria in January 1981. He struggled with a speech delay, could barely form a sentence, but everyone described him as gentle and shy and lovable. His parents, Deborah and Drayden Davison, had divorced, and the children had been shuffled between relatives before coming to live with Delaney on North Charles Street in Decatur. Just one day after the disappearance, detectives tried to reach out to TJ's father in Florida for questioning. He never showed up for questioning, and then 3 days later, on October 13th, he was arrested in Winter Haven on unrelated assault and battery warrants. They asked him about his son. His answers were vague. There were rumors, never proven, that he'd been in Decatur around that time. Nothing stuck, no evidence, no confession, just more uncertainty. His mother, Deborah, was also in Florida. Her life had unraveled after the divorce, and she held on to every single hope that somehow her little boy might come home. When a group of missing children was rescued in Tallahassee 2 years later, one of them resembled TJ. Deborah stared at those photographs for days before investigators confirmed it wasn't him. Another false dawn. The rumors spread faster than facts. Some claimed TJ had been taken by a cult. Others insisted it was custody snatch. Police followed every lead, even the unbelievable ones. They searched remote farm buildings, drained ponds, questioned people in other states. Each time, the same result. Nothing. An unusual tip came in. A woman claiming to have a vision said she knew where to look. Sheriff Stephen Fisher wasn't quick to believe it. But when every lead had gone cold, you start listening to anyone who might help. So he and his deputies followed the woman's directions. Heading out into the muddy fields near Stevens Creek just outside Moreau, Illinois. It was a gray, cold October day. Search teams moved slowly through the brush while reporters looked on, waiting for a break. Standing nearby was the sheriff's wife, Donna Fisher, also a deputy, quietly scanning the creek's banks for anything that didn't belong. And they found nothing. No footprints, no clothing, no trace of little TJ. Fisher later told the Herald Review that dozens of people had called in with leads, some serious, some strange, but at that point, he couldn't afford to ignore any possibilities. When you're out of leads, he said, you'll follow every path you can. By the end of the day, the search was called off again. The fields were empty, the answers were still missing. But the story spread fast about the missing boy, a sheriff willing to try anything, and a community caught between hope and heartbreak. And then months passed, the leaves turned, the headlines faded, and TJ slipped from the front page, until one strange story brought it all back. In a small Texas town, FBI agents began receiving tons of phone calls from the county. People claimed they'd seen a boy wandering the streets of Mexico, a quiet, hearing impaired child who didn't seem to know where he was. They said he looked like Timmy Davison. Witnesses described him as 4.5 feet tall, light brown hair, freckles, pale skin, a little boy who would struggle to communicate but could draw. And what he drew stopped people cold. Sketches of a plane crash, one he said he survived. By then it had been months since TJ vanished from the parking lot at Brentwood Village Shopping Center in Decatur. But the story of the boy found in Mexico lit up the wires. The FBI confirmed it had received multiple tips, and agencies reached out to the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children for a comparison of photos and footprints. Social workers in Mexico tried to learn more from the boy. They said he was malnourished, wandering near a flooded field, missing 4 fingers on his right hand, details that made the investigators wonder if he had survived something terrible. The child claimed he had been in a plane crash. He said he walked away from the wreckage, pointed to scars on his left knee, stomach, and back, and then drew an image of himself walking away from the crash site. For a moment, hope flickered. Maybe after all these months, the story wasn't over. Maybe the boy in Mexico really was TJ. But the reports never confirmed it. The fingerprints didn't match. The trail went cold again. And the boy was never identified. And just like that, another story, another mystery, drafted back into silence. By the early 1990s, the case file had grown thick, but the energy around it had faded. Decatur's attention had turned to other problems. Layoffs at the factories, rising drug cases, a slow economic slide that left parts of the town struggling. And for a while, TJ's little face appeared in only anniversary blurbs in the local newspaper. A face on a poster that had yellowed with time. Then came 2013, 28 years later, when the story suddenly came back to life. The police were given a tip about checking the lot where Delaney's old house once stood, the same house that TJ was living in. The tip would bring a cadaver dog to the area that was alerted near a void in the ground. And for the first time in decades, hope flickered. The FBI would show up immediately. They didn't need a warrant to dig in the area because in 2002 the house actually burnt down and the city had owned the lot. As the FBI started to dig, they had an evidence response team with them, working shifts, even through the rain. Police reports said that some of the family members stood quietly nearby as each shovelful of dirt came up. No reaction, no response for those family members. Bones were found. For a few long hours, the possibility hung heavy in the air. After nearly 3 decades, maybe, finally, answers. But lab results crushed that hope. Animal bones, a possum, a cow fragment, nothing human. The earth gave nothing back. I try to imagine what that must have felt like. Almost 30 years of waiting, and then that brief surge of hope snatched away again. As I continued to dig into this case, the story seemed like it couldn't hold any more loss, but it did. I found out that 2 years after TJ vanished, another branch of the same family was hit by the same kind of silence. In April of 1987, TJ's aunt, Cindy Lee Smith, disappeared from Winter Haven, Florida. She was 27, a mother herself, planning to move back in with her parents and start over. Her boyfriend, William Donald Taylor, was the last person known to see her alive. Days passed before anyone even reported her missing. Then, the rumors began. Taylor had been seen selling her things. When Cindy's father forced his way into Taylor's house, he found her mattress, stained dark with blood. It was turned over to the police, but the science of the time couldn't say what that stain meant. Years later, that mattress was thrown away. The one object that might have carried the answer gone forever. Taylor's story kept changing. He said she left with another man. He said she'd gone to Daytona. He also said that she may have returned to Decatur to look for her nephew, TJ. But he said she just walked away. And when he died in 2007, he took every version of the truth with him. Sydney left behind her car, her dogs, a tax refund check, and a little boy who would grow up without his mother. Two lives lost, two generations of children left behind. It's a pattern that still feels too cruel to be coincidence. As the years have rolled on, the Davison case has slipped into the quiet corners of Decatur's memory. The town that once lined up to search the creek beds had grown older. The businesses around Brentwood Village have changed names, and the parking lot where TJ was last seen looks like any other small town shopping center. It's now been nearly 40 years since TJ's disappearance. 40 years and not a single piece of evidence that can say for sure what happened on that October day in 1985. I've spent years digging through this case. I keep coming back to the same questions. The ones I can't wrap my head around. How has there never been a single public request for new information from either of TJ's parents? How can a child vanish without a trace, and decades pass without so much as a plea for answers? And then there's Sydney. No new information about her disappearance either. Authorities have always said that her case wasn't connected to TJ's, but the shadows between them line up in a way that's hard to ignore. No answers, no closure, no truth. For 40 years, no one has seen this little boy. No one has come forward to say what really happened to him. But I still have hope. Maybe one day, someone will speak. Maybe a confession made in the final hours of a life. Or a man who's carried a secret for too long, finally discovering that his real name is Timothy. Maybe that day will come. But I have to admit, with all the research, interviews, everything that I've uncovered, I'm not sure if it ever will be solved. And that's the hard thing to say, because the only people who truly can give TJ back his voice are the ones who've stayed silent for 40 years. So I'll say this, the time for silence is over. We don't want a deathbed confession. We want the truth, and we want it now. TJ deserves to be known. He deserves to be remembered, and he deserves justice. From the American Hauntings Network, this has been American Dread. True stories of tragedy and terror from the dark side of American heartland. I'm Adam White. Thank you for listening.